smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Dogs have always figured into literature. From Homer's Odyssey to Jack London's Call of the Wild, dogs have starred in some of our favorite stories. I personally was never allowed to have a dog as a child. I can hear the collective moan of pity right now from the audience. But as a result, I think I felt particularly connected to fictional dogs. Dogs in books, dogs on the large screen, and certainly dogs on the small screen. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Good Dog Podcast, where today we focus in on one particular fictional pup. Perhaps you've heard of her. Lassie. My guest is T.C. Boyle, well-known writer and, since 1986, a professor of English at USC, the University of Southern California, where he founded the Creative Writing Program. Boyle is the author of 19 works of fiction, including The Road to Wellville, Tortilla Curtain, and Drop City, and has won countless awards, including the 1988 Penn Faulkner Award for World's End. In 1975, when a graduate student at the University of Iowa, T.C. Boyle published his first short story in Esquire magazine, Heart of a Champion. It speaks of an exceedingly smart lassie who has to save a particularly dumb Timmy. T.C., thanks so much for your time today.
Yeah, hi, Joanne. Boy, you've taken me back in history quite a ways.
You remember that story?
Oh, I remember it very, very well. It was one that I used to read aloud in public a lot. I loved it. In fact, Isaiah Schaefer reads it a lot for his selected shorts that he does on NPR, and they recently did a CD with dog stories or animal stories, and that one is included.
So, what was it about Lassie that spoke to you?
You know, it is a satiric piece, and you know, I grew up watching TV as a kid in the 50s and 60s in New York, and this was our mythology, these TV shows, and Lassie in particular. But then, as an angry semi-adult, I realized how false it all was, that whole smiling mom and pop sort of routine, and also the way that we relate to animals as animals ourselves. And so I guess I did a sort of revisionist story for Lassie.
Which is a total hoot. Now, it was a very different time where we were all, it seemed, watching the same thing at the same time. Very, very different than what's going on today when we're bombarded with so much media.
Well, this is illustrative of a wonderful thing about human life that people often forget. Everything always progressively gets worse.
Not too cynical there, right?
And, you know, when we just chatted briefly before you turned on the podcast, we were talking about the fact that I have written about animals a lot, all various kinds of animals throughout. One of the guiding things that I've written about, and I suppose Heart of a Champion is the beginning of that, is how we are animals living within a finite environment on a measured planet. And so more and more I've written about the ecology of this planet and the other animals, and also, too, about dogs. Very recently, I did a story called Admiral in Harper's last fall, and it's been selected for the Best American this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's about people who clone their dog. You know, this is possible today, to clone your favorite dog. Your dog dies, you're heartbroken, you clone it. It cost a mere $250,000, but, you know, will it be the same dog? Well, of course not, because it grows up under different conditions. And in the story, I'm wondering even about the age of the people who own it, the smells of the house, and so on. It's narrated by a young African-American girl who, in high school, had worked as a dog sitter for a rich couple. That dog, Admiral, has passed on, and they've cloned Admiral, too, and now she's gone through college, doesn't have a job, come back to town, and, you know, they give her benefits and $25 an hour, and she comes to resume her duties only with the new Admiral.
I like the premise a lot. Is part of your fascination with this the way that we have, as a society, gone completely nuts about our dogs?
We've gone nuts about our dogs because we baby boomers are elderly, crotchety, senile old farts who have no children, and the dogs have taken the place of the children. And, of course, you know, it's better than I suppose rattlesnakes taking the place of the children.
I suppose. But people will spend any amount of money to keep them alive, give them Prozac, whatever it takes, right?
Well, I haven't got to that stage yet. I am the owner of a pulley, the dog with the dreadlocks.
I was just going to say, that's kind of the Rasta dog, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, that's the Rasta dog. How has this come about? Well, because my wife's father is Hungarian. And this is our second pulley, our first pulley. It got old and was eaten by the coyotes up in the Sierras on the mountain one snowy night. And now we have this pup. And she's now 5 years old. And I would have no other kind of dog now, although originally, before I had pulleys, I had a pair of huskies. Both of which met horrible ends because huskies are constantly running away, hunting and killing things. So I have a pulley now, and I'm very attached to her, and I hope for the best. In fact, when I'm done talking with you today, I'm going to take her on a long hike.
So you don't ever brush that hair or cut it or anything? It just stays
No,
there?
I think that the dreadlocks of the pulley are the same kind of dreadlocks that Bob Marley had. You know, you just let it grow and knot and snarl, and I presume, I don't know about Bob Marley, but with the pulley, of course, stink. This is what dogs are for. They bring a little stink into our lives.
Absolutely. So you don't think your huskies meeting a bad end was any sort of retribution to what happened to the lap dogs and tortilla curtain?
It may have been. And, you know, with Kucha, the elder pulley, he was about 13 or 14 when he was attacked and eaten by the coyotes. When he was a pup of about one, I was out on the mountain, and this is in the southern Sierras in the Squaw National Forest where I've been going most of my life since I moved to California. Anyway, I was with my two young boys and the dog. It was dusk, and the coyotes at that season in December will gather because they're mating. And he, as an eager young male, smelled the female in estrus and went running after her deep into the forest. And I couldn't see him, of course, but I was chasing after and hearing the yips in the distance and so on. When I finally got him, there were many coyotes circling around, and they'd torn him to pieces, but no permanent damage. And once I got there with a firm stick, they wouldn't show themselves, and they howled all around and so on. So he escaped them then, but their descendants finally got him 2 New Year's Eves ago.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, again, I was heartbroken, but if you consider it, it's better than the doggy rest home, I think.
I guess so. Well, we treat our dogs in some ways better than we treat our people. I know when the time came, we were able to euthanize our last dog, and it was the humane thing to do. We can't do that with people so easily.
No, we can't. And this would take a whole other podcast to talk about the way we treat the elderly. And, of course, now that I am elderly...
it's all relative. You're not...
I will be 87 on my next birthday.
Believe me.
I begin to relate more to the old folks.
Absolutely.
You know, they're in the way. They are always in the way. You go to the supermarket and the busload of old folks has just come, and there they are all dazed, standing there in the aisles wondering where their food is. And yes, of course, yeah, I'm impatient and they're in my way. But on the other hand, I hope one day to be as old as they are. So, you know, I can tolerate them.
And we young ones will try to remember to treat you well. Actually,
well,
I think I'm
much.
The same age.
Thank
so what are you working
so
on these days?
Well, I've just finished a fat, fat novel about Frank Lloyd Wright and his women. It's called The Women, from the point of view of the women in his life. And I've also finished a new collection of stories called Wild Child, which talks to the themes we were discussing earlier. And there are a couple of stories that address those themes, including Admiral. And a story that was in the Best American last year called Balto, which isn't directly about dogs, but its main image comes from the famous dog Balto, who, you know, the Malamute who had, or Husky, I'm not sure which, who had run the diphtheria vaccine up in Alaska, on which the Iditarod is based today. So there are many stories that deal with feral situations and people as animals. The lead piece, Wild Child, is a novella about L'Enfant Sauvage, the wild child of Aveyron, about which Truffaut made a movie many years ago.
So is that collection available yet?
No, you know, I don't know if you or your listeners have heard about it, but there's some kind of election or something going on in this country in the fall. And so we've had to, that was a joke, by the way.
I'm with you. I just keep shutting off my microphone.
We've had to hold back the novel.
I'm losing my sense of humor about the election very specifically.
Oh, I'm tired of it already. But, you know, we had to hold it back because I've learned the hard way that it's very difficult to get any press when everybody's in a frenzy about the election. So we're holding that book till February, which means that the collection won't be out till the following February. But and by then, I hope to have the new novel, which I'm just starting now, ready as well. So I have some books stacked up, but it's not so bad for my fans because I've had a book every year or year and a half for the last 20 years. So
it's unbelievable. I mean, the way that you are churning these out, how much of the time do you spend writing?
Well, I try to live a normal existence, but like everyone else, I go to work in the morning. And when I'm done, you know, it's now. It's around now. And
but you also teach.
I teach one day a week at USC, and by the way, your information is slightly wrong. I've been there since 78 when I left Iowa after getting my PhD.
Should never believe what one reads on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can go to tcboyle.com, and I think the information there is fairly accurate.
I'll give it a try. Absolutely. I just have to ask you, though, about Frank Lloyd Wright. I was just talking mm-hmm. to someone about him the other day. I live in Frank Lloyd Wright country with the beautiful Marin Civic Center that he designed. He was a hell of a guy.
Yeah, I don't think it's that beautiful, actually, the Marin Civic
Center. It's a little Jetsons.
Yeah, I'm not that crazy about it. I like the prairie-style architecture most of all.
He was one heck of a guy, though, huh?
Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm talking to you from his first California house, built in 1909, the George Stewart House. He was an egomaniac, of course, like all novelists, which is why he fascinates me. And those who know my work will know that I've written about other famous American egomaniacs like John Harvey Kellogg, inventor of the cornflake, and most recently, Alfred C. Kinsey in The Inner Circle.
I enjoyed that
great
one.
Sex guru, yeah.
My book club read that one, T.C.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. It's pretty sexy stuff, isn't it?
We thought so.
Especially when you consider us as the human animal, as Kinsey always did.
Now, that was very, your whole approach, though, was very clever, doing it from the point of view of his cohort. That was great.
Mm-hmm. And I had a difficult time because it seemed the natural way to get into Frank Lloyd Wright, but the structure of this book is very intricate, and it was what connected me to the book to begin with. I'm telling it through the point of view of his three women and his three wives and his mistress, but it's a third-person narration. However, it's overridden by a first-person male narrator who is presenting this to you as a text that he has written. He's a Japanese invented character who was part of Frank Lloyd Wright's atelier in the 30s in the apprenticeship. So it's a very rich and complex book, and it also tells the story backwards in time. So I think
fascinating, but we have to wait till February.
Yeah. It's also, if you don't know much about Frank Lloyd Wright, it will give you everything you ever want to know, just as if you'd read a biography, and yet presented, as you can imagine, with a degree of humor.
Excellent. Any dogs in the book?
No, not a single dog or a single yap, bark, or howl in that entire book. But don't be disappointed. In Wild Child, as I said, you will find some dogs.
Great. Good talking to you today.
Okay, Joanne, my pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thanks today to T.C. Boyle and to all good dog listeners who have been sending in suggestions for topics. I'm booking shows now based on some emails, one on how working people can best care for their stay-at-home pups and one on nuisance barking. Both good topics. So thanks for listening and do stay tuned. I'm Joanne Green for GoodDogPodcast.com.